I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome to The Conology, the podcast that talks to the voices behind the films of one of the world's greatest anime filmmakers, Satoshi Kon. I'm Michael Leader.
And I'm Steph Watts, and we've seen the lot of them.
And I'm Jake Cunningham, and these films are speaking my language.
So join us on our quest into the world of Satoshi Kon. Hello, Jake and Steph. Welcome back once more into the Conology. We're going to have a bonus episode today. We did tease this in our previous episode, how we wanted all the way through the Conology to open up beyond our three perspectives on the work of Satoshi Kon. We had some great contributions in our mailbag episode, but today we're going to have a full interview.
Yes, I am really excited about this, not least because perhaps this is the start of a brand new journey for me. Perhaps, Michael, this could be the start of a whole redux of our entire project, because this means we're having to watch a dub of a film, because we're going to be talking about Tokyo Godfathers, and I initially watched that in Japanese with subtitles, and we talked in our episode about the American G-Kids dub, which has been released in the US and hopefully will be coming to the UK sometime soon. But we've got a very special guest who has contributed to that new dub.
Yeah, so we were lucky enough to talk to Shakina Nafak, who is the voice of Hannah in this new G-Kids dub. So we talked on the episode about how the English subtitles in the original Japanese maybe don't do some of the translations around Hannah's character justice properly, and the fact that the original voice of Hannah was a cis man, and as people have been watching Tokyo Godfathers more and more, Hannah has kind of been picked up as this trans character rather than more of a drag queen character that Satoshi Kon might have first intended. So G-Kids hiring a trans actor to play this role was a really big step, and we were really excited to actually talk to Shakina about what she kind of sees in the character of Hannah, what that new dub is bringing to the film now, kind of 17 years later, and just about that kind of ongoing issues around representation in anime and dubbing. So we started off just talking about what her relationship was with anime and how Tokyo Godfathers kind of fit into that. So let's hear from Shakina.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So, Shakina, thanks so much for taking the time to chat to me today. I'm really curious, actually, to start with, before coming to work on Tokyo Godfathers, did you have any sort of relationship with anime? Like, did you have any preconceptions about what anime was as a genre? And did this film kind of change those, or... what you expected?
You know, I'm definitely like an anime novice. You know, I had seen like a few iconic films with friends, and like I had, you know, I had like grown up watching Aeon Flux. So that was maybe like the only anime that I was really exposed to. And then when I got the call to audition for the role, I went and watched the film, and I was just like so inspired and blown away. And it did shatter a lot of preconceptions I had about anime, just because it was so grounded in the real world, even though it has these sort of magically real elements. In the, you know, limited exposure I had to anime before this movie, I had never seen anything that seemed so grounded in reality.
I think this is quite an outlier.
In following conversations, right, that's usually brought up a lot, but I respond, I mean, you know, it just, there were so many aspects of it that that like hit me on an emotional level, you know, on mm-hmm. first watch, and it's one of those films where like where you can like forget that you're watching animation, you know, and that doesn't happen a lot for me. Like I'm accustomed to the suspension of disbelief, but there are sometimes like watching it when I like literally think I'm watching human characters like have an argument, and then I'm reminded that this is animated, you know?
I think, the kind of, the characters are so kind of cartoony that somehow adds to that kind of suspension of disbelief that they are quite real. And I think also you have these amazing performances behind it, and I've watched some of the new dub that that you're providing the voice for, and it's just, yeah, it makes it feel so kind of warm and human
for
despite
sure.
being animated.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and then I love the cartoonish aspects of when these characters, like, you know, when like Gin turns thermometer red, or like Hana totally transforms when she's like imitating the taxi driver. You know, there are aspects to it that keep it fresh and fun and sort of like remind you that this is fiction, that this isn't, that this is animation. But yeah, at the end of the day, you keep coming back to this very real world story and real world people.
So has the new dub of Tokyo Godfathers has already played in the US?
Yeah. So we released in the theaters right before, at least here in New York, right before we shut down. Literally, it was my last night out in New York City, and already it felt like we were like going into a war zone and like crossing enemy lines. But we went out to watch the movie on the big screen, and then New York was shut down. So I know it was seen by some people, and then it recently came out on the, you know, wherever on demand is. So people are getting it on Amazon and iTunes and such over here in the States. I don't know when it will be released internationally. I'm assuming before Christmas time. I hope so, because, you know, I think it would be really great to have this new dub be available as part of like new holiday traditions.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully it comes out in the UK and everywhere else before Christmas time so we can revel in Tokyo Godfathers.
I'm going to make a few phone calls, see what I can do.
So what is it about Hannah that you think makes her such a great character?
Well, she's larger than life, and I think people respond to that. I think people respond to strength and grit in the face of adversity, and they respond to big-heartedness, and they respond to, you know, like joy, especially when a character can find joy in like irredeemable circumstances, you know, and I think that's like what Hannah is, you know. She's just like this universal mother figure, and she's like dramatic and loud and brash, but loving and loyal and affectionate and deep and poetic and mystical and faithful, and all kind of wrapped up into one, like, you know, uncontrollable wild woman. So yeah, what's not to love?
Yeah, definitely. I think as well her kind of I really love the moment where you get to see that kind of in her professional environment, like when they go to the club that she used to work at and you kind of meet her family, and then you get that flashback to her performing.
Yeah,
I feel like it all kind of comes together.
Yeah, that scene in the nightclub is my favorite. I mean, like the sort of like Spanish cantina song she's singing, and getting like see her in her heyday. And I love also the image when we visit the, you know, the lounge when they're looking for shelter and looking for Gin, and we see the image on the wall of Hannah and her husband in the younger days, and just like understanding the sort of like showgirl life that she must have had, you know, and the I mean, there's something about this is very broad, but from my experience of like trans femme culture, that is like we can make, you know, like magic from nothing, and yeah, you just get that sense that that's always been her life. You didn't really get into this in the previous episode, but I know when the casting announcement came out that like they had brought in a trans woman to read the role, there were people, or to voice the role, there were people who were upset because they felt like Hannah's not a trans woman. She's a drag queen or something. First of all, like those things like don't have to be mutually exclusive. There are like trans women who are also drag queens. But I don't know. There's just like so many aspects of her character that feel like, you know, deeply and truthfully trans to me. And I connected with those and I tried to bring them out in my performance.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, well, it's really interesting that she started out by Satoshi Kon saying kind of, he kind of meant for her to be more of a drag queen character, and she's been kind of picked up by viewers and people see her as more of a trans character. So I think that's really, yeah, interesting how that character can be read by a different audience than the person who made it and kind of adopted by viewers like that.
I mean, I'm not, I don't work with G Kids. I don't know what their motivation is behind their choices, but my point of view as an artist is like, if you're going to revisit a story and tell it again, like how can you make it the most relevant to the audience of today who's going to experience the story? And so, you know, even though it's only, I mean, it's less than 20 years since the original, there have been tremendous strides in terms of like our understanding of trans identity and the words we use, the labels we use. And so what might not have been considered a trans role or a trans character in 2003, I would argue might have to do with like a lack of understanding and a lack of exposure and a lack of visibility on the part of trans people. So that now in 2020, we can look back and we can say, wow, like we might have been using this language to talk about Hannah. We might have been saying these words, but culturally, we understand now that there are a lot more cues and clues embedded in the character herself, communicating her transness, you know? And so we can honor that and make the choice to say different, you know, rewrite some words in the scripts for the dub and the sub, and you know, be conscientious of being on the right side of the joke, for example. But one of the things that has come up since the dub, which I think is very important and has been was on my mind from the moment I took the job, is, you know, as an activist who's so focused on issues of representation as a trans woman, you know, I was really thrilled to see this opportunity be made of the Satoshi Kon estate saying, no, we want to go the extra mile to make sure we cast a trans woman in this role, and G Kids, you know, affirming that and running with that ball. And then, you know, some of my friends and colleagues in the industry who are also trans women, but who are trans women of color, and some, you know, Asian trans women, felt like, well, why was there a white trans woman playing an Asian role, an Asian trans woman role, a Japanese trans woman? And that's, you know, a really big question that I think, at least here in the States, where we are really, you know, like facing a huge call to action around equity and representation. It's a big question to ask in terms of dubs in the future, and what kind of translations matter in terms of casting, you know, what kind of representations matter, and who, in the case of my casting, like who gets erased when we prioritize transness over whiteness, for example. So, so it's a really sort of open-ended thing that was brought to my attention through working on this project, this dub. And I just think it's a really important thing for us to continue discussing and working to advance change on, because I know, for example, in the video game voice acting world, there's been a lot of pressure to cast more Asian actors in these characters that are, like, you know, clearly drawn to be Asian characters. So, yeah, you know, I sort of like, I leave that to the industry, you know, to contemplate. But I also want to say that I think, you know, fans really rejoiced in the authentic casting of a trans woman for Hannah. And I got a lot of support and love for that, and a lot of appreciation from people who felt seen by that. And so I will say that, you know, the voice of the fans and the voice of the audiences for these anime films, like, carry a lot of weight, and production companies and producers will respond to calls for more diversity and calls for greater authenticity and representation. So if that matters to you, and you are, you know, a fan of anime, and you and especially care about the way that dubs are cast, then I encourage you to keep raising your voice about that on social media and letting people know when you appreciate it, and not being afraid to let people know when they think when you think they could be doing better.
Definitely. I think, yeah, I guess the good thing about kind of anime at the moment, it has such a huge kind of fan, it has so many fans behind it, and hopefully that will kind of spur, if we're getting kind of these more dubs and new dubs, hopefully that will spur more representation kind of right behind those voices.
Well, every platform is an opportunity to engage in a conversation that we need to be having, you know, globally about how people are represented in the stories that we tell. And so you can be a fan of anime and stay completely apolitical, and that's fine. But you can also use the thing that you love, which might be this art form and these movies and these shows, and you can find a way to, you know, bring the political conversations that matter to you to the form that inspires you. And I think that's how we make real change.
Mm, definitely. I wanted to ask just actually about the kind of recording process and kind of how that was reworking some of those jokes. I don't know how much you were kind of looking at the old subbed versions and the differences in the new one at all.
Yeah, we had the original Japanese, the literal translation, the original subtitle, the new subtitle, and the text to be spoken. So that those were all columns on like every line of the script. So you could sort of see what the work that was being done to remain faithful to the original language and adapt the language for a contemporary audience.
Amazing. Because we had talked to one of the kind of people in charge of dubbing of Studio Ghibli films, and they were kind of saying about this kind of having to make sure it still comes across and you still get the jokes and everything, but it has to be in a way that you would normally speak and not just like the literal kind of translation right. as you might see in a subtitle.
Exactly. And it has to match the shape and movement of the mouth. So in addition to the like linguistic tricks you're doing on paper to get a good translation, you also have to match it to the dub. So there were times when we would, now I can't remember exactly the quote, but I know it was between Hana and Yuki, and it was one of the insults where she calls her like geezer grandma or something like that. And we thought we had found the solution in terms of like the perfect line that sort of captures Hana's identity and like ownership of her own self. And then it didn't fit with the shape that her mouth was making. And so we had to go back to the drawing board and this happened a lot with, you know, I had the director in my ear. We had the producer in the booth, and occasionally we'd be like pinging emails back and forth while recording to be like, you know, can we try this instead? It's, even with the song in the cantina, for example, we had to write a bunch of lyrics. Mm. Those weren't like, you know, as precious as, you know, lines about the identity that we're trying to get right. But it was still part of the fun of trying to make this new dub as, you know, as tight as possible.
I need to go back and check actually about the little haikus that Hana says, kind of how close those ones are, because they're some of my favorite parts of the movie, I think.
Absolutely, right?
Poems.
So beautiful, that those pauses that she takes, and the whole film just sort of stops and hovers. And yeah, it's so beautiful.
What you were saying earlier about it kind of feeling so real and kind of in the real world, despite being an animation, this does feel like a film where it is set in Tokyo, but it has kind of themes that are universal and that kind of anyone who's watching should be able to look at and relate to in their own surroundings.
Yeah. You know, two things that are interesting. Well, the first is that the Tokyo National Theater was planning on a live stage production of Tokyo Godfathers next year in 2021 with like COVID-19 and the decimation of the theater industry. I don't know how quickly they'll get back, you know, to that level of production, if that's on the table still, but super cool to know that the story is still relevant enough to merit a translation to a whole another form. And that people are ready and excited to see a live version of these characters, which I think is really thrilling. And then to your point about the universality of it, you know, it's interesting because if you watch the dub, it's set in a real New York context. And I kind of love that because it's sort of taking this story that originated as, you know, gunslinging old West American fable, and then like casting it in, you know, turn of the millennia Japan, and then now bringing it back to like a new millennium New York, you know, and it's just a story that keeps on, like I said before, finding new ways to remain relevant. But I think that like, yeah, there's something universal that allows it to sort of drop into a genre and a character dynamics and tropes that we sort of already know and love. It feels familiar at first sight.
It's the ultimate holiday movie, ultimate Christmas.
Right, it's a Christmas movie. Yeah, what more do you need, you know? Yeah.
Do you think you're going to delve into more anime after working on this film?
I am down, you know. I mean, I've been watching. Oh, now I feel like a jerk because I can't think of the name of this new. Oh, Seis Manos on Netflix, which was really interesting because it was like anime meets like blaxploitation and mexploitation. And I thought that was really an exciting series. I don't know if they're going to get renewed for another season, but that I thought that was really cool. And then as an actor, I mean, I had never done voice acting before, Hannah, and I loved it and I would love to do more. I think it's so freeing and there's just so much more you can do. And then as a writer, you know, I have stories that I'm always trying to find like the right form to tell them. And I never really considered animation as an avenue that I might go down as a storyteller. And now having worked in this form a little bit, I'm excited to see like what I can, you know, bring to that genre as a storyteller.
Mm-mm. I think it's such an exciting time as well, because you do have this kind of whole medium that is now just like showing up on Netflix and you can right. just dip in and watch like a whole series that like 20 years ago people were like struggling to find VHS tapes for and stuff like that. So it's really exciting, I think. We do talk quite a lot on the podcast because Jake, our co-host, is very kind of new to anime. Mm-hmm. And normally has these kind of more Western frames of reference. So he's a big fan of Indiana Jones and things like that.
Yeah, I heard that.
That are always kind of coming in and out. So it'll be like, yeah, this is like Indiana Jones and this is like Lost and whatever. Mm-hmm. I guess just like, do you have any live action or other animated kind of non-Japanese films that you're really kind of into that you'd always recommend to people?
Yeah, that's a great question. Wow, I didn't think I'd get to like make these kind of recommendations. There is a film, it's called The Cradle Will Rock, and it is a film about the Federal Theater Project in the United States in the 1940s, but it's like also just has the most amazing cast in the world. And it really has a lot to do with like the state and art making and subversion. And it's one of my favorite movies of all time. And so since you asked if I had a recommendation, I thought if there's like one film I could recommend to your audiences to maybe understand like a little bit about like theater makers and the legacy of dissent in the United States, that I would offer that film. And I mean, looking up the title now, The Cradle Will Rock. And so I can give you some more information about it because it's so killer. but anyway, yeah. It has, so this is the cast. You ready? Hank Azaria, Ruben Blades, Joan Cusack, John Cusack. Who else is really famous? Cherry Jones, Bill Murray, Vanessa Redgrave, Susan Sarandon. Like, there's just so many incredible people. Oh my Emily God. Watson, John Turturro. It really is an incredible, incredible film. And yeah, it was directed by Tim Robbins and written by Tim Robbins. And I think, I don't know when it came out, but I'll find that out too for you. But anyway, it takes place, in the 1930s during the Great Depression when the U.S. government created a program called the Federal Theater Project, was meant to put out of work actors and theater makers back to work. But then people became suspicious of like the sort of like communist threat of state supported actors making work about the economic crisis. And it's just a brilliant, brilliant, magical film that everyone should see.
That sounds great. Everyone's going to have to go watch that now. And directed by Tim Robbins.
Yeah.
Actually, I saw one of his... I went to the Venice Film Festival last year and he had a film... It was like a documentary about, I think, his theatre company going into prisons and kind of...
Right.
Doing absurd theatre comedy in like small devised groups in prisons.
Work, yeah. Well, you know, that's something like... I'm always going to be like a proud theater artist before I am any of the other things, you know, that I do, like whether I'm working in anime or TV or whatever. And it's just something about like coming up in the theater that, I don't know, maybe it gives you a different kind of like grit and empathy because it's so hands-on and collective and so reliant on make-believe. And so you just learn how to, you know, create worlds together with very limited resources. And I mean, eventually, you know, you can get huge resources when you get like West End or Broadway, but that's not what like growing up a theater maker is. Like, it's like being in a black room with like a black box and a black door and being like, I'm going to make a wonderland.
I guess that helps with having to create a voice for a character and not having any
anything.
Props or anything if you're dubbing.
No props. I remember in the previous episode, y'all were talking about the chase scenes in Tokyo Godfathers that are like very dynamic and action adventure and very Indiana Jones. And you have to imagine that that whole thing is performed like with like me alone in a room with a mic, sitting on a stool, trying to like breathe like I'm in danger. You know what I mean? It's all like screams and yelps and pants and huffs. And it honestly sounds like it could be like the soundtrack to like a Blue film or like a chase scene. You just don't know what's going on. Yeah. I mean, listen, we all are tasked with, you know, the job of convincing people it's safe to go on the journey to imagine with us, you know, that you can, that you can believe in this story enough to invest in it with your heart energy, you know, with your soul, not just, you know, analytically. We want people to feel. And so we have to do our work to conjure that and then, and make it believable and invite people in. And just, that's what, you know, theater makers, storytellers, I mean, shamans around fires. I mean, we've been doing that for centuries and we will continue to do that in whatever medium we're afforded.
And that was Shakina Nafak talking to Steph. Steph, thanks so much for bringing that interview to us. It really broadens out the conversation. And thanks to Shakina too for sparing her time to talk with us. You can follow her on Twitter at Shakines. That is S-H-A-K-E-E-N-Z. And we should thank GKids as well. GKids doing amazing work in the animation space. We've mentioned them so many times, both across Ghibli Tech and Chronology. So thanks to the team for helping set up that interview. You can now get that new Tokyo Godfathers dub in the States if you live out there. Hopefully one day we'll get to hear it internationally in the UK soon. Fingers crossed.
And although we covered his final film two episodes ago, we have actually now reached the actual end of the Chronology series, which means that we are on the hunt for what we could be doing next on the podcast. So whether that is a further exploration of Ghibli related projects, whether it's another director like Satoshi Kon who's got a filmography we could be diving into, or something entirely different. If you've got something that you want us to cover, do let us know, and you can do that by emailing ghibli@little.studios.com.
We may still have one or more treats and unusual episodes coming up in the meantime, though. But until then, you can follow Jake on Twitter at Jake H. Cunningham.
You can follow Steph on Twitter at _StephWatts.
And you can follow Michael at Michael J. Leader. Ghibliotech is a Little Dot Studios production. Our music is made by Anthony Ng. Our artwork is by Sophie Moe, and Jamie Maisner is our audio wizard. The show is produced by Michael Leader, Jake Cunningham, Steph Watts, and Harold McShiel.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.